All right, guys, tonight I have a real treat. We are going to sit down and talk to Master Tequilero Jose Valdez, the guy in charge of Tequila Partida. And he's going to talk about the relationship to Macallan Scotch and this absolutely amazing tequila. He's going to talk about their whole process, his story of how he got into tequila, and what the magic is behind making this great brand. So stick around. I think you'll love it. Jose, I am so excited to have you here today to talk about your fantastic tequila and to go through the process. How are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty well. Thank you for having me, Brad, today in your show.
I'm so excited to share with all of the listeners and people who watch about Tequila Partida. Partida is such a well-known name and family throughout all of tequila that I'm excited to hear the stories. And if you could tell everybody a little bit about you and what you do and let them know what your like position is.
Of course, my name is Jose Valdez. My position is the general manager of Tequila Partida and Maestro Tequilero of the brand. I create the products, all the products that Tequila Partida has, and I have literally tasted every single batch of every production of Tequila Partida. My position is to be the guardian of the quality and consistency of the product, as well as the supply chain and distribution in Mexico. And since 2022, Lucas Bol, global company that is available in 110 countries, acquire the brand, 100% the brand, and I continue working with this group in markets in other countries, such as China recently, Europe in Benelux, and obviously we are in America and in Mexico, and we are trying to open also Canada.
Wow, that's amazing. I didn't know you were that global. I knew that you were a huge brand, but that's really exciting.
It's not huge, to be honest. Actually, Lucas Bol is not a massive company. It's not obviously one of the top global spirit brands in the world. I don't know in which position we are, but it's public company. So the last year we sold 100 million euros, which is not a super, super big company compared to what we with Edrington. We were partnered with Edrington one time. They own part of our company in 2017 to 2022 for 5 years. Now, this company, Edrington, is bigger. No, it's €1 billion, so 10 times more than Lucas Bol. But the difference is Lucas Bol is such a small employee company. So we are in total around 70 people globally, most of them in America because it's the only organization in the country that there is a sales organization, around 40 people. And then the rest is in the corporation in the Netherlands and Amsterdam. And here my team we are 9 people in Mexico.
That's a lot of hardworking people to get this product in all of those countries. That's really amazing.
Yeah, I think it's a perfect fit of Tequila Partida that we learn how to optimize the resources to keep the quality. So instead of running our distillery, that at the very early stage we did that, we rent the distillery of La Familia Partida in Casa, and we became our own producer, Casa Partida, official producer in those years, 07, 08, a couple of years that we became our own producer. And suddenly we noticed that the business of running a distillery is different than running a brand. Running a distillery is like an airplane. You have to keep it flying all the time if you want to be productive. And whether it's your brand or it's other brands or any production for, you know, in distilleries, you can produce bulk tequila for other distilleries. It's allowed by the law. And many distilleries don't run the distillery 100% all the time to save the cost, no? So we decided to move to another distillery in tequila after, let's say, 3 years of the early stage from 2005 to 2008, 2009. Then we started since that year with another distillery that they produce, but we have our team in the distillery, and we supervise and control every step of the production to control the quality and consistency.
Tell everybody a little bit about your journey in tequila. How did you end up in the tequila business?
Well, I think it has been 20 years when I get involved in the tequila. I study engineer in a local university in Guadalajara. I was always fascinated about the spirits, and especially tequila, because it's a product that cannot be produced out of certain territory in Mexico and that represent Mexico. So I have a trip outside of Mexico and learned that not many good tequilas were available in many countries, even in the US in those years, only, let's say, two premium brands. No, in those years, it was only Patron and Don Julio, but no more options. No, and you walk into a liquor store nowadays, 20 years ago, you see all the additive freeze, all the celebrity, all the corporation, and you have like value tequila, like premium, like super premium, ultra premium. And I think the founder, the investor, the main investor of Partida saw that vision, Gary Shansby. And he said, I think it's a good opportunity to build a premium brand different than the current couple brands that are in America and non-brand in Europe, non-brand in Asia. So that was the vision and the early idea of making tequila.
So did you grow up around tequila and the industry as a child?
Correct. Well, I was in my 22 when I started getting interested in the tequila industry and started visiting distilleries and learning about tasting and taking courses. But officially, it was until 2005 when I have a couple of years graduated as an engineer, and I met Gary and I met Sofia Partida, and both have this project to create this high quality tequila, no additives since day one, no shortcuts to represent the good tequila from the valley. I didn't know anything technical about the tequila in those years. So I learned, the first way I learned was doing, practicing. It is very costly because every batch of tequila production is a lot of agave, a lot of energy, a lot of process. But I was super lucky that I met my mentor, a guy that worked for a big brand of tequila for 40, 45 years. And he retired from this company. And after the non-competing years, he was able to be an advisor. And he was my personal coach and advisor, how to learn about the tequila, but more importantly, how to manage the process and the team to run a distillery. And I think I learned from him. I also learned, I took courses available, all the courses available in those years. I took the CRT multiple courses with different universities, with the ITESO, related to the exportation of tequila. Then I took the Diplomado en Técnico Tequilero, which is a tequilero technical, which were the basis to make a master in Maestro Tequilero with the University Autonomous of Guadalajara and the CRTA. So I took that course as well. I took another seminar with Jaime Villalobos, Jaime Villalobos' father. No, Jaime Villalobos, not Jimmy. His father, he's very well known in the industry because he knows a lot and he educates you about the history, about the not too technical, but I would say more of the background and the, you know, history of the Mayagüel and the mezcal and the tequila and all the agave spirit. And yeah, a lot of it was very fun. Also with Ana Maria Romero, I took several courses. Ana Maria Romero wrote this book that is called Los Aromas del Tequila, Tequila Aromas. And she also is an advisor for many brands and maestra tequilera for many brands. I think the one that I recall, the last one is Mi Gente and General Gordos Tieta or something like that. So she is very involved. So I took courses literally within those years at the very stage with all the available people, because in those years it was very difficult to get the information and courses. Like nowadays, it's very easy after COVID and all the AI and the social media and the cell phones. 20 years ago, No, everything was very like old fashioned, and the industry was very jealous. So the maestros tequileros, it was very old, and they don't want to share anything. It was very jealous because they, I don't blame them because they pay their life working in a, let's say in fermentation. So all the research and practica they put in place, it was literally their knowledge, their part of their, of their experience. And sometimes they don't want to share. So when I hired this guy, his name is Benjamin. So Benjamin shared to me, well, like a lot of things, but more importantly, a methodology to learn, a methodology of continuous improvement and listen the team and follow the numbers and be more scientific rather than romantic and feelings.
So, as a master distiller, what is your favorite part of the process?
I believe I personally enjoy eating the cook agave. That's what I enjoy most. And also, I noticed when I tasting with the with Francisco, which is the quality manager of the distillery, and sometimes other guys of the distilleries, we taste. And that's when we listen to others and say, "What do you think about the profile of this cook agave?" What I enjoy most is that, but also that is a specific point. What I enjoy is to see the whole picture. Like, okay, this batch is gonna be, let's say, 5,000 cases, which is 20,000 liters. So how much agave we need? Okay, we need 100 tons of agave. Okay, so that's 5 trucks. Where can we find? Okay, so the scouting of the agave takes us a lot of time because we are extremely picky, if you will, no, very strict in the quality and the consistency. It was tough last year and the last 3 years because the shortage of the agave. Right now it's not that tough because obviously there are more options of agave supplier. We don't own agave, so we go normally with brokers and with the distillery also, they have their own brokers, but we need to approve the quality of the agave. So we, Francisco and I, need to make sure that the agave that is in the paper, in the guía, as we call the CRT, is really the year that that represent visually. So we prove what the paper is saying that is actually that the plant represent that quality, that age, and then we measure the sugar. Watching the whole process from the scouting of the agave, then everyday harvesting, we have the rule of 24 hours of harvesting and start the cooking after less than 24 hours to capture the freshness of the agave. And then do a slow cooking, like 24 hours in autoclave, less than 90 Celsius degree. Normally it's higher pressure, higher temperature, and a shorter period of time, like 6, 7 hours. We do it in 24 hours, normally 16 hours to 18 hours of steam. Then the rest of the night is without the steam, but close. Then in the morning, guys, 7 a.m., open the autoclaves and start the milling. Then the water that we use in the milling is what we call volcanic water because it's a well around 100 meters the depth. And the expert says that takes a couple of decades or more years to natural filtrate that draining water. So we extract that water, we mill that, we extract the juices with that water, using that water. And then the fermentation is completely open, completely natural. Many brands says that only use agave, yeast, and water. We only use agave and water. We don't use yeast. The yeast is from the environment and from the agave. And after the fermentation, yeah, the distillation is also very important, it's crucial. I like also to walk in the fermentation and smell in different stages of the fermentation, no? Like at the very stage is very yeast. And then in the middle is more like a fruity and milky, if you will, at the end. We don't go with the second fermentation with the malolactic, so it's only one fermentation that takes at least 3 days. That's the time that the minimum. We control with natural propagation and inoculation, but we don't use any champagne, wine, or bread yeast. No, it's completely natural from the garden. And yeah, the distillation is crucial because we measure the methanol and the superior alcohol from the first batch we call parada. So the first parada, we take the sample of the, let's say, we produce 1,200 liters in the first batch. So we take a sample of that, send to the lab, to the chromatography lab to see, to measure how much methanol and superior alcohol has. And based on that, we either cut more heads and tails, but also the process is very visual. So you see when the heads and tails, because of the color of the liquid, that is the right moment. Also, we measure the alcohol volume and temperature. So we have our method, our team, obviously. I cannot be 24/7, so I have a team at the distillery. And then the aging part is also good. Answering your question, yeah, it's the cooked agave, what I enjoy most because I tasted many. And also to let's say, the project of every production, I see like a project. Okay, this project, guys, we select, we work hard for 3-4 weeks. This is the result. And ended with a tasting. So everyone tastes and say, hey, this batch is amazing, or this batch is not super. It was better, the agave, than what I expect in the liquid. We are very tough, you know, and very critical, and try to be objective with the blind tasting as well. So I enjoy that process that involve the people and see the result of hard work and the perfection. Obviously, there's not perfection. I mean, not, there's no perfect product, but in a perfection process every batch. So right now we have produced more than 250 batches in 20 years. Like I said, I have tried and I have lead, thank God, every single production and bottling batch.
Wow, that's awesome. So, so when you guys are doing the harvesting, I know that some places will cut the pincas all the way down and shave the piña a little bit closer. Some places leave an inch or 2 inches of pinca to change that flavor profile a little bit. Are you guys going with a little bit more of the pinca on the piña than shaving it all the way down?
Yeah, to be honest, Brad, it has been a learning process for us. At the very beginning of Partida in 2005, 2006, I was, you know, recently graduated, and I was literally taking like every production process like very stricted and very without flexibility. We said, okay, we want the tequila, the agave, completely white, like jicama at the beginning. But then we realized that if we have longer leaves, we're going to have a little more different profile, no? Like different, more herbal, more mineral, more different profile at the end. And if we leave like long leaves, it's going to be a problem. The problem is the methanol, because less sugar is in the leaves. So that generates methanols in the fermentation. And also the flavor is a little bitter tequila than the sweeter, because the sweeter part is in the center of the plant. So we decided to do like a policy, general policy, that is no longer than 2 centimeters, which is 1 inch, not 2 inches, it's 1 inch. So we don't want completely white. So we go back and say, no, we made a mistake. Instead of making completely white at the beginning, which is good, but it's lack of personality and flavor in my mind. So we want more leaves, but not too much leaves, like no longer than 1 inch or 2 centimeters.
I kind of wondered, because I do pick up a little more of a clean freshness of agave, where some tequilas, it's all just that cooked agave. And then some tequilas, you get that herbal and that vegetal cleanness, that where you can kind of taste like a, I always say it's like when you just crack open a celery stick, you know, and you can smell that celery and it's really bright. That I get that bright taste in your flavor. So that's why I wondered if there was a little more pinca on there, because I get a really good vegetal clean taste out of that. I really like it.
That's the purpose, actually, Brad, to have a tequila partida blanco that represent the fresh agave. The protagonist here is the fresh agave. Obviously, you cook the agave and that tastes like a caramel, no? Or a sweet potato, which is super nice. It's sweet.
Yeah.
But the green part, that you know, the experience of being in agave field. I bet you've been in agave field. So when you harvest, when the Jimador harvests, that smell that, like, you know, recently caught the leaves, that freshness we want to be in every sip of tequila.
Yeah, I completely pick that up. That's one of the things when I very first tried your brand, I was like, wow, I get such a clean, fresh agave flavor. So from there, are you doing a low pressure autoclave and then using a roller mill for your extraction process?
Correct. We use the roller mill. We don't use Tahona.
And then stainless steel, is that what you're using for open fermentation?
Yes, stainless steel tanks, open. Yeah, basically.
And then what are you using for your stills? Are you copper?
Yeah, it's a stainless steel pot steel, the outside, and inside the coil is made out of copper.
Gotcha. So stainless steel.
And you mentioned clean, Brad. That surprised me because over the years, many people mention our tequila blanco is clean. It's a very, we say in Spanish, franco, which is very frank, you know, tells you what you're drinking. No, it's not hiding anything. And the second word that people say is the clean. And I think cleanness comes from the agave, but also the stainless steel that we are mentioning in the whole process, because the autoclaves is a stainless steel. Many people think, okay, all the autoclaves is a stainless steel. Not necessarily. There are autoclaves that are made of stainless steel.
Okay.
So not stainless steel, it's not as clean as that. It's more like a metallic, mechanical, if you will. No? More. So everything that is in contact with the agave during the production process of tequila partida is stainless steel. Autoclave, the milling, roller mill, the stainless steel fermentation, and the pot steel.
So after you're done with distillation, are you doing any kind of resting before it goes to bottling?
Two things that is very different what we do in the distiller, and I learned this in a very early stage. The heads and tails, first of all, we don't reuse the heads and tails. This is a common practice in the industry. Heads and tails are sent back to fermentation, right? Because you don't want to lose alcohol. But I do believe that if you send the heads and tails back to the process, you're not discharging what you think is not good for the product. So you basically are putting back and trying to separate again at the end, but you're not really separating. Actually, distillation is separation. That's the definition of the distillation. So what we do is we don't reuse heads and tails. What we do basically is to separate both in the destrozamiento, which is the first distillation, and rectificación in the second distillation. We separate both heads and tails, and those are treated separately to distill, and is used for the distillery for other products. Not the same quality of partida, not the premium. Is not puro corazón, as we said. No, the puro corazón is the heart of the distillation. And once the distillation is done, we put the tequila in, we filter, not activated carbon, just filter, a cellulose filter, just to retain, to clean the tequila. And we leave it in a stainless steel for 1 month without movement. 1 month. Because we believe in the stabilization in that moment. Then we have another stabilization when we put the water. When we did cut to the proof, or the alcohol by volume, we leave it at least 1 month in a stainless steel without movement.
Yeah, it's amazing how we've taken a plant from the ground, and within a couple of days of harvesting it, we've turned it into this crazy awesome liquid. And to have it rest and let those molecules figure out what they are again, I think that's important. I think a lot of great tequila is rested like that.
Yeah, so, our process takes from the agave to be distilled around 7 to 10 days, but to be in the bottle is a little longer because the stabilization process.
Sure. Now, is this the Blanco, the same tequila that's going in your repo and your añejo?
Correct. So for us, it's crucial to make a super good Blanco. Every batch of Blanco, we put all of our effort to choose the best agave and then to accompany, to monitor all the process until we have the base, which is Blanco at 55. And we have two options, to bottle as Blanco, then we put the water, or start the aging process to become reposado, añejo, or extra añejo.
So for your regular añejo, extra añejo, and reposado, what are you aging that tequila in? Like your standards?
Yeah, well, again, Brad, has changed over the year. Everything has changed because, for instance, the agave, 20 years ago, our average agave age was 9 years. That means that we have agaves of 10 or 11 years and agave of 7 and 8 years. No, but average, it was 9 years. Nowadays, it's impossible to get an agave of those years, of that age. No, and the same with the aging. I think the quality of the bourbon barrels has changed. I'm not saying that it's bad, has changed. I think the extraction of the bourbon in the barrels has changed, and therefore the extraction and the natural coloring extraction of the Blanco from the barrel is taking a little longer and is weaker in color and in flavor than 20 years ago. 20 years ago, we aged Reposado 6 months, exactly 6 months, and we have like an amazing color. No? Nowadays, we have to wait a year, and it's not even 80% of the color that we get of six months. No? So what we do is to blend sometimes with a Solera, an extra añejo, that a barrel that has more than 6 years, and we put liquid on that to increase in a natural way the color. Or we don't care, and we say, okay, this batch is going to be a little lower, and it's okay. For years, we try to match all the color all the time in a natural way. But I would say, I think in the last few years, we said, okay, it is what it is, and we cannot control that. And even we got for more than a year in the Reposado, we're not going to gain the same color that we used to. Because the barrel cannot give you that to the tequila.
Sure, she's kind of giving up a little bit. Are you using American oak for your normal barrel process?
Yes, American oak, medium toast, charge, I think it's 200 liters, used with bourbon, normally 3 years. We like to work with bourbon brands that has a high content of corn, like Mashville with 80% corn, like Jack Daniels. And that's what we like to use, but we are not with only one brand. We use several brands, Jim Beam, Heavenly Hill, Knob Creek, Four Roses, many, many other brands we have used over the years. But yeah, that's what we're trying to get, like a sweet bourbon, no? 80%, at least 80% corn.
Very good. Okay, so I would love to know about this little logo here.
Yeah.
That's hooked to the bottles and then on the top of the Robafina. So can you tell me a little bit about that?
Of course. We call the spirit bird, and it's the marriage between the traditional Mexican history with the modernity. There is a story that we have this story that we created about our logo that is a religion story. That the goddess like Mayahuel gave us the tequila, gave us the agave, but we didn't know as humans how to make the spirit. So they sent a messenger, and he's the spirit bird. It was an eagle that discovered the nectar of the agave and bring that nectar to the people, to the village. And people discovered that nectar fermented, and they, you know, regular people, worker people that suffered, everyone suffered in certain way, have a pain relief in a natural way of this agave nectar, which is related also with the Mexican story that, you know, the goddess, the indigenous goddess, no? We see Huitzilopochtli, and it was a plant, and this plant was burned with the thunder, and it was cooked. So it's related, it's mythological, but also is created part of the story. And if you ever go to Mexico City, to the Anthropologist History Museum, you're going to find a lot of stone animals, you know, like jaguars and also eagles. And you're going to find this shape of the spur bird, which we were inspired by the Mayan and by the Aztecs indigenous about this bird.
Wow, that's very cool. I love coming to Mexico. I've been going to Mexico for 20 plus years. And coming to Guadalajara and going to Tequila and, of course, Arandas and Atotonilco and all of the region where we visited, the people are so amazing. Mexicans don't realize how amazing you guys are. You're amazing people. You're welcoming and you're sweet and the tradition is rich. And, you know, it's weird to say because I'm not from there, but every time I come back to Mexico, I look at my wife and I'm like, I feel like I'm home. Like it's so refreshing to be there and to learn these different traditions and all of the different symbols, I think is really cool. From the churches in your squares to the symbols and the traditions throughout the towns and how tradition kind of can, you know, kind of reigns true. People stick to their traditions and their families. And I just think that's just amazing. So I salute you for being so amazing all the time, every time we come.
Thank you, Brad. I think you're absolutely right. And sometimes we don't realize how lucky we are with tradition, history, products, and hospitality. I would say vocation or call that we have in our genes, because until you go outside and you see other culture that they appreciate your culture more than you, that's when you realize that, wow, there's all people or Mexican people that go and live outside and they miss this, no? We have all relatives living in LA or in Chicago, in New York, in Florida, say, hey, I want to go to downtown Guadalajara and see the churches, and I want to just hang out and go to a restaurant or just have a family party. And you said, because we don't have this, you know, I don't have friends that have this kind of celebration and this Dia de los Muertos and this family gathering and these weddings and these churches event and religious and this product, no, and this welcome. That you can be welcome. I have been lucky to live in 3 cities in Mexico, and every city is the same. People is very open, no? In some places more than other, but in general, people is very open, no? Very friendly. It's part of amazing of what I have been in this industry for so many years, and I expect to be more years, because you share happiness, basically, no, experience with all the brands of tequila, especially if it's brands that you put effort to do additive free, not because it's a slogan or a marketing slogan, because it took you more to make this tequila. It took you more time, more resources, more effort. And people are appreciating this the moment they're drinking and the day after, no, to avoid the hangover or to feel well, because they trust that the quality is way better, because it's not, nothing artificial that is going to hurt your body. But yeah, thank you. Thank you for the compliment. I every time that I receive this compliment, it's like, yeah, I feel very proud of being Mexican. And I'm thanking enough the tourist people that come and help us to build this industry.
Yeah, I've never been welcomed into a group and felt like family so quickly and so easily with the people that I've gone and met. So let's talk about this, because I was really surprised when these show up. And I want to say thank you very much for sending these to me. And like I told you off camera, I've tasted them as soon as they got here. I let them rest a little bit. They instantly moved up to one of my favorite repos that I've ever had, and one of the best flavored añejos. And I actually redesigned the bar for them to go to the top of the bar in the center and removed some other tequila from there, because this is absolutely amazing. So if you could tell a little bit of what we did here to make this repo and this añejo, and, you know, get the story behind this a little bit.
Of course, it's a very nice story, and super, super lucky and proud to be part of the Roble Fino development and promotion. Roble Fino, after 15 years of perfecting Tequila Partida Blanco, Reposado, and Añejo, batch after batch, and group, regroup, and continuous improvement, and listen to our consumers. So we felt that we need to develop new products. So we partnered with Edrington, like I said, for it was a distribution agreement in the US for 2017 to 2022. And turns out that in 2018, a year later, I was super lucky to be part of a small group that visit the Edrington distilleries, Scotch distilleries in Scotland, single malt Scotch distilleries, including Macallan, the new distillery. They recently opened in 2018. So it was they opened in June. I was in September. I visited September. And also I went to Glenrothes, which is another whiskey, Scotch whiskey single malt. And then they also own the Vikings, Highland Park. Highland Park is in an island in Scotland called Orkney, where they believe that the Vikings came. Anyway, me and my team, my boss, and that time, we spent a few days in Scotland learning about the process. And after this trip, I said to the Edrington team, no, they have a operation in America and also in the Scotland. So I have a meeting with all of them and say, hey guys, I'm super fascinated. Thank you. I cannot thank enough to be in these distilleries and to learn from the master distillers, the master of wood, and the whiskey blenders, no, the three experts in the process. Thankful for everything you have done. But I think we need to capitalize this in a product. And I have a few ideas. The first thing I ask is barrels, because I learned that the whiskey is not like tequila. They don't have blanco. No? All the whiskeys is aged. So they make a neutral grain, malted barley, no? It's a grain that is a neutral, they call new make, which is the distillation product. And then it's put into the aging cask. But the selection of the oak, first of all, where the oak come from? No? The oak is a trick that takes 100 years. So where this oak come from? And then what liquid or what wine or spirit has before the scotch? So long story, short story, I insisted for over a year about the barrels. They said, no. So I escalate until they said, okay, Jose, we're going to send you a few barrels so you can make it. How many you need? And I said, four. I use one. I want to put blanco, reposado, añejo, and extra añejo. That's it. I only need four. So they sent a container. And at the beginning, it was like, wow, cool. But then it's a problem because having an empty barrel is a problem because if you don't use it, it's going to dry out, the rinse is going to, it's not going to be adjusted anyway. So over 1 year, we experimented. I put it in different barrels, blanco, reposado, añejo, and extra añejo. The blanco didn't go well. I think it was the blanco is very aggressive in destruction. And most of the Scotch whiskey use sherry, Oloroso sherry. And it was full of sherry. And it was like an agave sherry, but not the oak. So I don't know. It was not only my opinion. I have a panel tasting here in Guadalajara and also at the distillery. So both in the offices and in the distillery. And now blanco, we said no. Reposado, every week, literally every week we took a sample. The CRT were crazy. They would say, you're crazy. You're asking us to open, because in those months, the verificador, the guy that come to the distillery, has to break the seal, the paper seal, and put it again. No, so every week we ask, and then he broke it. So we have, and we said, this is an experiment. We are learning. So we measure color and do tasting. And after 1 month, it was like, no, it has no personalities. It's not tequila. It's not whiskey. It's not sherry. But then after 2 months, using the reposado as a base, it was amazing. And we tasted at 55% direct from the barrel. So I said, okay, let's take the liquid out and then let's decide the alcohol by volume, putting 40, 41, 42, 43, up to 50. And we did that exercise several times until I decided to be 43 based on what I listened to the majority of people and my personal taste. Yeah, that was the result of the Roblefino Reposado. So basically it's 6 months up to a year in the Jack Daniels. And then after that, take the liquid out and put it in the Oloroso Sherry. These European oaks are this oak from Galicia, which is a region in Spain, in the north of Spain. That's where the tree grows. They create the cask in Jerez, which is the sherry area, and then they put Oloroso sherry. There are multiple sherries, like Amontillado, Pedro Jimenez, but there is one in particular called Oloroso sherry, and that one is very sweet, very nice sherry. So they put it 3 years, and then sent to the Macallan Distillery, put the Macallan 24 years, 12, two passes of 12 years, make a Macallan 12 twice. And then those bottles were sent to tequila, and we put this Reposado. So as you can see the complexity, so we have agave, we have different worlds, no? We have Mexico, USA, because of the bourbon. We have Spain, because of the sherry and the oak. And we have Scotland, no? Because of the single malt. So it's a tequila that is super complex. And that's the reason I decided to elevate the experience to 43%.
It's amazing. I'll do reviews on them later in the next couple of weeks and kind of talk about each one and the flavors in each one. But there's a great oakiness. There's a great agave flavor. But the fruitiness that's in these and the amount of dried fruit and fresh fruit that you get in the flavor is just, it is unbelievable. Like I've heard they were great. And then I opened them and tasted them. And I was like, okay, nobody has talked about how great these really are. And I had a couple of buddies that said, I've kind of seen those and they weren't really on my radar, but they are now. And I was like, no, they should be. They're absolutely top shelf. Amazing.
And I recommend that. To taste in different moment with different glasses, with different temperature. And also if you want to do with ice cube, like an old fashioned, and then in the sniffers, the whiskey sniffers, and then the tequila riddle, and then in the cognac, and then in different, so you can actually, you're going to taste the different.
Kind of like opening up a scotch with a little ice cube or a little scotch and water, how it changes the profile. So it changes the profile here too.
Totally.
In a good way.
In a good way. And depends on your preference. You're going to choose which one of all the options is your favorite.
Well, it's amazing. And again, I want to say thank you, from the bottom of my heart for sending these to me. I really appreciate it. Anything new coming out that people don't know about yet that you can kind of spill the beans here? Is there any new products in the works or any new neat stuff coming out?
Yeah, actually, we have a very exclusive program called Single Barrel that we launched with Añejo, but now we're launching the single barrel for Roblefino. So we have already a few customers that say, okay, we want our own barrel. They're going to select the Añejo barrel and we're going to put in the sherry cask. And it's going to be customize the label with the name of the account or the name. We have groups like New York, New Jersey Agave Club. These guys are from, and they acquire not like Roblefino, but they acquire a single barrel. We have another from South Carolina, a liquor store that won their own Roblefino. No? And we have Sip Tequila from Florida, from Stuart, Florida. They want their single barrel. And we have multiple clients with the Añejo, but nowadays we're launching the Roblefino. That's the, I would say, the newest program, if you will.
Well, you just took out my whole tequila budget right there with one conversation. My wife is not going to like you anymore.
And let me tell you something, Brad. We believe that it's a very, very just price point of Roblefino. Why is that? Because the packaging and also the liquid. The packaging is a crystal hand-polished bottle that only the bottle, because has engraved the Roblefino, which means fine oak, by Tequila Partida. That is real Mexican silver ink.
No kidding.
Oh, no kidding. Wow. That's real silver ink.
And the cork, you know, bringing the bird back to the cork, and the cork is solid and big. And I mean, so I have a question. How come the repo goes to here and the añejo goes to here? It looks like there's more añejo in the repo.
Well, it's because the production process of the glass is different. It's a semi-automatic process, and sometimes the bottom is taller or thicker, if you will, and some of them are slimmer.
They're beautiful.
Yeah, and I forget to mention, we have three Roblefinos. I send you the Reposado and the Añejo. It's using the base of our Añejo, which is 2 years, almost 2 years of aging in the Jack Daniels. And then it's finished 5 months in the Macallan casks. So we have more intense, and it's 45% alcohol. So my point regarding the fair price, retail price, is because if you go outside and see in the shelf different tequilas, that the packaging is not even close to this, or the liquid with this kind of exclusivity of cask, double angel share, no, or double aging losses. Yeah, we are in a $140, $150 the bottle. You can find sometimes in $120. It's super pretty fair price considering, competitive set with other competitors, but also considering the cost of goods sold, no? The cost of producing this glass, this cap that is super solid metal, and all the details. The label is, it has my name on the label, it has the batch number per, so it's very exclusive, very limited.
And aging in a barrel that has some of the most exclusive scotch on the planet. I mean, I think there's Macallan bottles that sell for $25,000 and $30,000. I do see pretty bottles on shelves. I tell people all the time, that's a $200 bottle with $5 tequila in it. Don't drink it unless you like it. I am a drink what you like. But yeah, this is a $300 tequila in a beautiful bottle for $150.
Correct.
I mean, that's...
You define absolutely correct.
Yeah, this is amazing. This is one that I can't wait to share with people when they come over. And like I said, I can't wait to do the reviews and actually talk about it. Sometimes in the interview, we taste through it, but I want to do a whole video on just tasting through these because they are so good. And all of your tequila is good. Let me ask you, I got a wrap-up question that I'd love to ask this question because I love hearing the answers. So you've had this great journey into tequila. You've spent all of these years refining an amazing product. So if you could pick anybody in the world, alive, not alive, any single person you could think of, who would you like to sit down with and share a glass of your tequila and your tequila story with? Who would that person be?
That's a good question. I guess I'm very religious. I'm very Catholic religious. So I guess La Madre Teresa.
Okay.
The Mother Teresa.
Mother Teresa,
of Calcutta. I guess she was a wise woman and saint woman as well. So I would like to have a conversation and probably... I don't know if she drinks, but maybe have a partida with her.
Oh, that's really cool. That'd be such an amazing experience, and probably one of those people that you would just let them talk and you would just listen the whole time.
Correct. Just making good questions, no?
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. Well, I really appreciate so much for you taking your time today. I know that you're very busy out there creating amazing tequila, and to take time to talk to a goofy guy on the internet like me, I really, really appreciate it. Again, I really appreciate the tequila, and I'll definitely send you a message next time we're in town. I'd love to stop by and meet you in person, and just thank you. Thank you very much.
I'm the person who have to thank Bradley for having this, having me you in your show. And for taking the time to taste Tequila Partida and promote our brand. So I really appreciate it. And let's keep in contact in case you want to do another tasting, maybe with just the Roblefino or with another product of our line. Or if you come to Guadalajara, obviously we can take you to the distillery and to live the Tequila Partida experience.
I'll take you up on that next time we're there. So I'll put your website and everything in the video, and I'll share where people can find you. And, you know, salute. Thanks for taking your time today. Really appreciate you very much.
Thank you.
Have a great night.
You too. See you.
Thank you.